was Waxahachie.
And you are listening to X-Ray FM, KXRY Portland at 91.1 FM, K296 FT West Haven, serving Portland at 107.1 FM, and K219KU Nehalem, serving Nehalem, Wheeler, Manzanita, and Rockaway Beach at 91.7 FM.
Streaming live and archived at xray.fm, where radio is yours. Welcome back to The Commons, your Monday morning radio guide to news, culture, and local action.
Start your week informed with stories that matter to you and your neighbors, spotlighting people and events shaping Portland's future, environmentally, socially, and economically.
With a focus on direct action, union organizing, and the thriving local art scene, we're here to help you play the cards in your hand and make a difference.
Whether you're tuning in for the news, the music, or the opportunity to act,
The Commons is where Portland gathers. And we're your hosts.
I am Julia Moore.
And I'm Hannah Francis.
And it is 8:01 on Monday, May 11th.
It sure is. And we're about to have a great interview, so stay tuned. We are just going to play some music from our upcoming guests. So stay tuned. Julia, you got anything else for people to look forward to?
I mean, I guess voting. I don't know how much people look forward to voting, but May 19th is coming up. It's not as far away as you think it is.
So true. All right, well, here is Hacienda from our upcoming guests with Concerned Artists of the Philippines, Portland. And we'll be right back for that interview. Stay tuned.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the Commons. You were just listening to Hacienda by the Concerned Artists for the Philippines, Portland. And we have here with us Ryan and Sandra to talk a little bit about their activism and their music and why they're doing this. So welcome. If you would test out those mics, that would be great. Let's see. Can we hear you? Oh, let's see. Okay. They're not hearing us, so let's see if this works. Does this work? Lovely. Thank you two so much for being here, Ryan and Sandra. If you would just give yourselves a little bit of an intro with your political name, pronouns, and role at CAP if you'd like.
Oh. Hear me okay?
Yeah, absolutely. Perfect.
Hi, everyone. My name is Sandra. I use she, her pronouns, and I'm organizational development officer in CAP.
Nice. Amazing. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Yes. And I'm Ryan. He, they, and I am one of the education committee leads in CAP.
Amazing. Thank you both. So will you start us off by just telling us a little bit about what CAP is and how it started?
Yeah. CAP is the acronym for the Concerned Artists of the Philippines Portland chapter. We are the first North American chapter of the original Concerned Artists of the Philippines, which was created originally in the 1980s during martial law era in the Philippines by many prominent national artists, including the, you know, very prominent filmmaker Lino Broca. And we are the legacy of that. We are a collective of Filipino artists that fight for pro-people, progressive, anti-fascist, national democratic society. And in particular, we fight against censorship and for the freedom of expression and the freedom of speech, which is why I was created in the first place during martial law. So, yeah.
Amazing. Thank you, Ryan. Anything to add, Sandra?
No, that's great.
Sweet. And then, sorry.
Yeah. I mean, I love that you brought up Lino Broca. How do you see what has happened, or how has artistry evolved since his time to now? I mean, that's a huge question, but like, how do you all see what you're doing, like carrying that legacy forward?
Yeah, it's interesting. I can talk about that, I guess. Like, yeah, it's interesting being part of a very historical organization, especially even just like a chapter of it. But also just, you know, being the first branch in North America. And I believe there's other branches that are about to pop up soon in different places in North America, at least. But being the first is really special, I think. And I think when you're talking about that evolution, you know, it isn't too much different anymore. You know, we had martial law in the Philippines, and it, you know, it ended. But the government is still there, and we're, and you know, part of a lot of the stuff that we're going to talk about today is a afterfall or you know fallout from the government still being in place, essentially, you know, even after martial law had ended. So we view it as just a continuation of that fight, essentially, even though, you know, even though martial law technically has ended, there, you know, there's still a strong legacy of that, and fascism is still alive and well in the Philippines, and we're just continuing up that work, essentially. So
mm-hmm. Thank you. And can you tell us a little bit about that song that we just listened to, Hacienda?
Yeah. So Hacienda, or this EP that we've created, comes from our EP called Echoes from the Fields. And it's a selection of live covers, which Hacienda is by General Strike. And our EP really talks about to amplify the stories of hardship and resilience of the Filipino peasant laborers against exploitation, landlessness, and displacement. And Hacienda specifically talks about the exploitation and suffering of Filipino farmers and agricultural workers living under the Hacienda, meaning a large plantation estate systems in the Philippines. Specifically talking about the Hacienda Luisita massacre that happened in Tarlac.
Yeah, thank you. I'm sorry if I was cutting you off.
No.
Okay, good. I mean, that kind of like brings us to these 19 people that were killed just a few weeks ago. In the Philippines, in Negros Occidental. I'm sorry, I don't know how to pronounce that. I should have looked it up. But two of these people, Lyle and Kai, were directly from the Seattle and Portland communities. Can you tell me a little bit about what happened to these folks?
Yeah, absolutely. So this past April 19th and 20th, the Armed Forces of the Philippines, the AFP, conducted what they called a military action of a firing and a strafing. So that's indiscriminate firing and strafing, which is basically just from an aircraft, they fired into the Barangay Salamanca in the town of Tubosa on Negros Occidental, which is one of the islands, or which is part of Negros Island, one of the islands in the Philippines. And in that indiscriminate firing, they killed 19 people, so among them human rights activists, journalists, students, and even children, and also displaced 653 residents, so 168 families, if you want to picture that. And they were essentially targeted because the AFP and the U.S.-backed Filipino government have deemed work that is basically any work that you do that's against land grabbing or corporate exploitation, or just even basic journalism, like exposing the true struggles of the people, especially in Negros, they view that as terroristic, which is ironic because, you know, this indiscriminate firing is one of the worst acts of terrorism in the Philippines in recent memory, as it stands right now. Just to give a little context about Negros, it's one of the most militarized and still very feudal parts of the Philippines. As was mentioned earlier, a lot of the industry in Negros stems from the hacienda system, which is a feudal system of both foreign and domestic exploitation. So, you know, about 60% of the sugar that's produced in the Philippines is made in Negros. But In Lagos, there's about 25% poverty rate, and it has the second lowest land distribution rate, which is basically all it means is that most of the land is owned by either just a couple of wealthy individuals or just corporations. So very few actual people who like till and work the land actually have ownership over it. They are very much under poverty wages, slave wages, and they effectively work as slaves there. Or a lot of the people, a lot of the farmers work as slaves, essentially as slaves there. Mm. Specifically the U.S. government does, you know, directly fund the Filipino military and Filipino government. A lot of that is under the guise of combating China, quote unquote, through the Enhanced Defense Cooperation Agreement, the EDCA agreement, which is also branched into counterinsurgency. So the AFP ostensibly has this fight or whatever against quote-unquote communist terrorist forces. But in reality, they do things like this, where they kill journalists, human rights activists, children, pretty much every day, and also ordinary Filipinos who even remotely fight against fascism or trying to fight for democracy and genuine land ownership and land reform. So, yeah, that's sort of the big picture of it with that specific incident and the kind of the situation as a whole.
Yeah, thank you for that context and for explaining all of that.
Absolutely.
I also wonder if you would talk a little bit about what Lyle and Kai were both doing there and like what sort of partnership and program there is. There's also, for listeners, there was an interview a couple weeks ago with some folks from iChirp and Bion that you can listen to learn a little bit more about this, but I'd love if you could just summarize a little bit if that's possible.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So Kai and Lyle, and also another activist, Alyssa Alano, were part of an integration trip or integration program where they basically had gone to Negros and gone to work and live with the farmers there, the rural people there who are actually working the land. And for a few reasons, they, you know, obviously they go there to you know, work the land with them, so experience the what it's like to actually be within that kind of oppressive system and to tell their stories and see their humanity and learn their struggle, and to bring it back, and also to bring it back here at some point, and also tell their stories through that experience, things like that. So it's really just, you know, integrating with the people and getting the best type of education, really, which is to experience their struggle with them and to exchange ideas and to learn how they till the land and work the land and basically that's what it was. Yeah,
thank you.
It's really devastating to hear that this happened. How are they being remembered?
Yeah, great question. Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So how they are being remembered, it's very like worldwide, of like here in the US and in the Philippines as well. There's been countless amounts of support from us as organizers coming together and paying tribute for Lyle Prijoles and Kai, and seeking justice, not only by asking the government to give back their bodies back to their families, but we continue to defend and give justice for the victims of the Toboso massacre and to defend Negros. And that's why we are doing these 19 days of action. And Ryan, do you want to add more?
Yeah. In terms of how we're remembering them, you know, we they are our martyrs, and the best thing that we can do, and I'm sure they would agree, is to just to continue their work. You know, they were fighting, they were there to expose the truth about how the people live on Negros and how the government has abandoned them and how they're exploited by both foreign and domestic forces and corporations. And so our 19 days of action, 19 days of solidarity are a continuation of what they were trying to do. So, you know, through art, music, poetry, education, agitation, what we're doing is just continuing what they were doing in the first place. So, like, you know, exposing how people live on Negros and to really push for genuine land reform and ultimately genuine revolution in the Philippines. Just as a historical note, when martial law ended, just to kind of talk about that again, in the history books, it's called the EDSA revolution or the People Power Revolution. And it's a little bit of a misnomer because it wasn't really a revolution. The government mostly was the same. We just changed the president, essentially. And we're kind of seeing the effects of that today because, you know, the government has not changed even, you know, and the same mechanisms of martial law and fascism still exist and they're expressed in different ways a little bit today. But it's no different from when CAP first started, you know, many, many years ago. So
thank you both. I wonder if you would share, like, walk us through a little bit the different 19 days of action and how folks can get involved with that.
Yes. So with our, again, in response to the victims of the 19 people under the AFP, we call this like 19 days of action to affirm that art and culture is not neutral and that as artists we have a duty to expose the truth, honor our martyrs, and advance the fight for national liberation. So these actions are spaces to learn from the conditions on the ground to create art that exposes the truth and uplifts the masses. It builds community in the face of state violence. We support for work connects us back to our homeland. And like within these 19 days of action, so this week we will have multiple different art builds. And today we will be at Reed College in their art annex, doing a puppet build from 6 to 9, where we will be creating a puppet based on genuine land reform and coming to there as not only artists, but from different sectors of women, youth, workers, and different activist allies to help us spread truth through this puppet. And then on Saturday, we will be busking at the Portland Saturday Market.
Did you say what 12... the puppet was for? Or what the for the parade?
Oh, yes. Yes. Also in collaboration with the Everything Under the Sun, a People Power Joy Parade on Juneteenth at 2 p.m. So we are there. Grassroots organization partnered with them. So please also check out their Instagram and their social media for more info. And then continuing that busking this Saturday, we will be busking from 12 to 12:45 and then again from 1:15 to 2 p.m. And then we will be releasing songs, doing some poetry nights, an art build, and picnic potluck. And then that build up to our last day on May 24th, our open mic and art gallery, where we combine all of the things that we've done these past 19 days into an art gallery at, and that is from 5 to 8 at the Filipino Bayanihan Center. And if you want more information, please follow us on Instagram at capcap.pdx. And then we also have more link trees to get connected to join CAP Portland and also join our campaigns, the fight against disinformation campaign to expose state lies with the brave truths of the masses. And yeah, that's how we can get involved.
Thank you so much. This one's really fun and also healing. It's so important to bring together people yes. around art. How have you witnessed the previous days of action impacting people?
Yeah, absolutely. We, a couple days ago, on May 9th, our kickoff for the 19 days of action was a report back from the Bayanihan Disaster Response Task Force team, which was facilitated by the was facilitated by NAFCON, the National Alliance for Filipino Concerns. So basically, some of our CAP members actually were in the Philippines in April during when all of this had happened in Negos as well. Our members, along with their larger contingent, integrated with rural people and farmers from Cebu, which is a different region in the Philippines, and also Tarlac, which is in the north. They were there the same time as everything had happened in Negos, and they were there doing essentially the same thing as Kai and Lyle and Alyssa. They were there to work with the people and experience their struggle and ultimately expose their fight against fascism, essentially. And so that report back, that event was our members coming back and kind of speaking on their experience and sharing what they had done and learned. Like, they wrote songs there with people, and they came back to perform and share those songs. It was very moving stuff, very powerful. We also were fundraising that event as well, and that went really well. And then also to kind of end it off here, when we're talking about kind of solutions and what kind of the next steps are and stuff, kind of beyond these like 19 days of action, is one thing that we are really kind of agitating for and pushing for is to, especially if you're a Filipino, is to return home and to continue the same type of work that our CAP members have done and that Kai and Lyle and Alyssa had done in the past, and going back home and integrating with people and really experiencing as the best form of education, really, and to learn their struggle and to expose the truth of their struggle and the truth of the Filipino government's fascism, to be there physically is super, super important. And so if you're listening to this and you are Filipino, or if you're not, if you're a solidarity ally, there's ways to get, you can absolutely get involved. So, you can go look up the Bayanihan Disaster Relief Task Force. We have one here in Oregon, and we have a few more trips coming up this year. So if you want to get involved this year, you can absolutely do that and do the same type of work that our CAP members have done and that Kai and Lyle and Alyssa had done. And that's really the big thing that we're trying to push for right now as we continue each day of action. So
amazing. Thank you so much. Thank you for the work you do and for sharing it with us.
Thank you for having us.
Of course.
Thank you.
Is there anything else that either of you want to add?
Yeah, just quickly, I want to add to tag along to what Ryan said. After these 19 days, the the truth and these stories will continue. So if you really are inspired by these 19 days, please join our organization. And if it doesn't resonate with you, join another organization that also fights for national democracy. They are different sectors that, like the youth, the women, the workers, different ally solidarity organizations. Make your own organization. So continue this fight for national democracy back home in your home countries as well. And yeah, that's what I like to add.
Thank you. Absolutely. Very well said. There's so many different ways to plug in and support each other. So thank you.
And thank you for telling us some context your artistry and the way that you're really bringing people in to participate in both the grieving process and what a brighter and more beautiful future can look like.
Mm-hmm. We're going to play us out with another song from your EP called Awitsalusita. Is that right? Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you both so much. And we will stay in touch. Take care, y'all.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Rolling.
Ang larahas ng saysayan.
All right, and welcome back to the Commons. We just had that great interview with Cap, and now we're going to get into some news from the Commons. I hopped into a budget meeting actually on Wednesday because, heads up to everybody who wants to go to City Hall for City Council meetings. The typical 9:30 a.m. meeting is now starts at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So, if you're trying to catch the council meeting where they're actually making decisions and casting votes, etc., that starts at 2 p.m. on Wednesdays. Right now, because it is budget season and their budget meetings start at 9:30 a.m. in the morning. So that's what I was able to hop into, and it was not at all a loss. I mean, they weren't making decisions at that meeting. However, there's a specific way that they go about going through the budget process, and the questions that they ask are very indicative of what matters to each counselor. And you can really see, I mean, we all know the money talks, you know? So you can really see how what they are concerned about when it comes to money relates to the kind of legislation that they're making at those 2 p.m. council meetings. And a huge part of that job is going over what's happening at the bureaus. And with the new city council structure, the city administrator oversees all of the bureaus. So they're like essentially the chief operating officer for all of the bureaus. And so if council is going to get information from the bureaus, they have to request it, or the bureau needs to come forward in relation to an agenda item and provide context on what's happening at each of those bureaus. And that is what happened on Wednesday morning at 9:30 a.m. is each of the bureaus gave a very, and I mean very brief slideshow, like 3 to 5 slides about how their finances are doing, what their big numbers are. And this is very important to get right because the budget season happens only a couple times per year. Mm-hmm. And the bureaus are working with millions upon billions of dollars at a time. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that is our tax money. So these are our dollars that are being discussed at council. And I did witness Parks and Permitting put a billion dollar number in millions on accident in their slides. This is like incredibly stressful, but it is their job for the bureaus to put this together. They just can't put $1 billion number in millions, especially because they usually put up beside that, you know, because they have to justify how much money they're getting. So they say, we have this amount of employees that we have to pay. We have these projects we need to put money into. Here's how that all, this is how the chips fall, essentially. And they had around, Parks and Permitting had around 700 employees and like 1.2 million that they had quoted. And that's just not going to cover the salaries of that many people. 1.2
billion is what they meant to say.
Yeah. And even that's, that,
yeah,
you know,
different.
It is huge. But
did they correct themselves?
But the thing, that's the thing though, is like when you're up at council, you kind of have to be firm on your numbers. They did say, you know, we got that wrong, but they couldn't tell you definitively if the $1 million number is in fact a $1 billion number. It was more of like Loretta Smith was one who called into question because she, you know, she's a business owner. She sees how the numbers need to
reflect the employees.
Employees and the cost of the projects and whatever. And she was like, this doesn't even chart for the businesses that I'm working for. Can you please explain this? And she said, is this supposed to be billions instead of millions? And they said, yeah, you know?
Wow.
And so, and no one likes an, yeah, around potentially billions and millions of dollars, especially in the context of the Housing Bureau misplacing a bunch of money, the arts tax situation, not being spent appropriately or being spent
people are increasingly like, okay, how is the PSF money being spent? Where is it going towards? So it's not a time to be confusing millions and billions. So, yeah, that
is
was
it,
part.
Is it ever?
It's really, I mean, it's never, but it's really stacking up. I think I at this point, everyone's like, wait, what is anyone doing with their money? Like, full audit. Mm-hmm. I hear a lot of people, especially like in the comments on our Instagram, like, Portland needs a full audit. I would argue that a lot of places just need to audit in general. Like, why isn't that a practice? Mm-hmm. That seems really ridiculous. But yeah, that was kind of what was happening with the parks and permitting. Of course, they're having to make cuts across the bureaus for different, a few staff positions here and there because of budget constraints. But yeah, then they went to the Housing Bureau. Michael Bonacore, the interim director, went up. He had, I think, a week left of being the interim director as of Wednesday, May 6th, so he's done. He's out. He was only there to essentially keep the Housing Bureau afloat, and he did, you know, I think he did a good job at keeping it afloat, but didn't really do anything additional to that. So we're going to play a short clip that speaks to that, and then we'll go to some more discussion on it.
Is this not an opportunity to dig deeper and maybe reset in ways that can be foundational in terms of where the Housing Bureau goes in the years to come? Because if this is that moment, I don't see that reflected in the budget. I kind of see a status quo. And if there may be no bureau that I'm more uncomfortable with status quo than the Housing Bureau after these last 6 months, I'm just trying to understand, because frankly, I would have expected to probably see a more aggressive realignment, reapproach, redesign for a bureau who, frankly, has only existed since 2009.
Thank you, Councilor, for the question. I appreciate it. Maybe I'll start with the idea that the bureau has been in existence since 2009. The bureau has, in fact, gone through a number of evolutions, and its current existence is a breaking off of being part of a larger entity that was the Bureau of Housing and Community Development. I think that's reflective of a number of transitions that the Bureau has gone through over the years, including a very intensive period of years recently in which there has been a high degree of turnover at the executive level.
Okay, so there's multiple things happening there. That was Councillor Zimmerman bringing up, hey, why isn't the Housing Bureau stepping forward with a bolder plan for the future? Everyone kind of has this question. There has been a call for the entire board for the Housing Bureau to resign because they have been very complacent about really poor living conditions inside of their rental units. They have had just negligible increases in the amount or decreases in their vacancies. I think they went from having a 14% vacancy to an 11% vacancy, which is not huge. And this is an echo from last year when Brian Hoop said, and I quote, "What Portland needs is stability and leadership." That's what Michael Bonacore really ended on there. He said, hey, it's actually been super challenging for us as a bureau to operate effectively because we've had so much turnover in leadership. I don't think he's saying, hey, we don't need to replace the board there. What I think he's pointing to is, hey, we need an executive director that's actually going to stay here. You're not going to remove them. They get to follow through on their plans, which I think we all thought we had with Helmi Hisarik. She had a definitive plan, tons of experience on executing projects to increase the availability of housing, and what was put on administrative leave and then eventually resigned at the end of 2025. And she said, quote, Portland's homelessness crisis is a direct result of an inadequate housing supply and siloed single-focused thinking that pits pro-housing advocates against those focused on tenant rights. With the rapidly eroding social safety net, Portland's homelessness crisis is likely to worsen. So the hope is that Portland can find a housing bureau director that can keep their job, can stick around, that won't be put on administrative leave or quit, or as the housing director before Helmy did, spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on extravagant travel spending. Mm-hmm. But I think that will depend in large part on if they can actually get some replacements on the board. Right now, the board is appointed, and the positions are appointed by both Gresham and Portland, but they're confirmed by the city councilors. So if those board members resign, we can replace the board, and the Housing Bureau can start passing new rules on how, you know, the living, how living conditions are inside their rental units, and also how to keep vacancies, not keep vacancies, to get those buildings filled. There shouldn't be vacancies. Mm-hmm. There's over 900 vacancies right now, and that's ridiculous in our housing market, and everyone pretty much agrees on that.
So, well, we can come back to this, but so yeah. the Portland Housing Bureau position was filled, right? Like a month ago, there was a hiring for it.
Do you got a name on who?
Yes,
it was.
Yes, they hired? I do. I'll be right back with that.
Okay,
I'm looking for it right now. I believe it was a report from Street Roots.
Go Street Roots. Go Street mm-hmm. Roots. Yeah.
I will say it could have been... Let me come back to this.
Okay.
I don't want to speculate.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't say anything about that at council, which I find interesting. It was simply that Michael is leaving, Michael Bonacor is leaving, and things are pretty status quo right now. While Hannah pulls up who might be the next director of the Portland Housing Bureau, I just want to give a heads up to everybody. I'm sure you've probably heard about this and feel some level of anxiety potentially about I-5 it's going to close by the Fremont Bridge and the Moda Center. There are two chunks of I-5 over there that are going to close. One further up by Fremont Bridge and the other lower down by the Moda Center. They will be repairing and reinforcing weak areas, bridge joints. They're really keeping the road from caving in while we're driving on it, which I think is really important. Better to get it all done in a short amount of time than, for example, only work on it at night and it be under construction for weeks and weeks and not accessible. Better to have functioning roads and bridges than to potentially have a faulty road. We have heard a lot of, especially testimony from people around Portland, that people are tired of the roads not being very drivable. However, during this time, travel times may take 2 to 3 times more than usual. So that traffic that hits at 5:30, 2 or 3 times that, guys, doesn't sound like a fun time. So it is being recommended right now that the reroute be taking 405 southbound to either I-5 south if heading south, or I-5 north to I-84 if heading east. This is just a heads up for the future. This is going to start September 11th, so it is still quite a few months out, but I'll be bringing it up again just so you can start kind of mapping your route.
Amazing.
If you're that type of person.
Thanks, Julia.
Yeah.
That's always good to know for the future.
Yeah.
Also, you got to excuse me. I did a complete brain misfire. It was the county's homeless board commissioner that they just hired for.
Okay.
Not Portland.
Yeah, I really think the Housing Bureau is kind of sitting out in the cold with no executive director right now.
It's a little concerning for sure.
Yes.
But we'll see what happens with that. I had one small note today, which is that Kash Patel was in Portland the night before last, and he was staying at the Sentinel Hotel in downtown Portland, which is a Hilton affiliate.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a big protest with, like, tons of different people outside of his hotel that night. And it ended up being called off by the Portland Police Bureau.
So I know why I don't like Kash Patel, but why do other people not like Kash Patel?
Well, he is the director of the FBI, and he is completely in Trump's pocket.
Yeah.
So he is 100% playing along with the fascist regime program. So that's why we don't like Kash Patel.
All right, so we have similar feelings then.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. But I just think that that's an important piece of information that, you know, might be important to flag for folks, is that, like, we don't know what he was doing here. I think it's pretty strange that he came to Portland and stayed in downtown. So, yeah, maybe keep an eye out for news on that. Maybe we'll have more next week.
Yeah.
And besides that, I think that wraps up news for this week.
Yep.
Of course, thank you to everyone listening out there, and thanks to our guests. We have a little bit of upcoming concerts, and then we'll hand you off to Tom Hartman. So, Alex G will be playing at the Roseland Theater tonight at 8 p.m., and this is their song, Runner. We'll be right back.
Thanks for that music, Hannah. I wanted to pop in here and say, hey, we have another interim director for the Housing Bureau. Her name is Keisha Light, and she was the interim director. Sorry, she's the interim director of the Portland Housing Bureau now. She did like city planning and economic development for the city before she became the interim director. And then Michael Bonacore, who was the previous interim director, is going to be the permanent, permanent executive director of Home Forward. And Home Forward is the one that operates a lot of these rentals that have vacancies. So we'll see how that goes. Keisha Light will join the Bureau starting May 18th. So,
okay.
Yep.
Right on. Thanks for that update. Yep. Appreciate you, Julia. And with that, we'll go on to another band that is going to play in town. This is Yumi Zuma. They'll be playing at the Aladdin Theater on Thursday, May 14th. This is her song, Drag.
I was never a good kid. Had to sit on my hands, stay still, tied down. I had to force myself. And then I was a good girl. I kept to myself, daydream, big smile. You go.
Again, that was Yumi Zuma, who is going to be playing